If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56diva.com. Lower.com, Equal Housing Lender, MLS 112-4061.
She is the executive director at Heartland Animal Shelter in Wheeling, Jenny Schluter-Schlieder, who has been around Chicago and working at animal shelters. I have known Jenny for a very long, long time. Jenny, first of all, how are you?
I'm great. I'm so excited to be here. It's like a blast from the past. But since we've known each other since I was 5 years old, you know.
It seems that way. Right. Not 5 years in the, let's see, in dog years or cat years, I'm not sure. Heartland Animal Shelter had about a year ago, just over a year ago, this massive flood. And the good news, as I recall, because we had you on the radio right after that, is that all the animals were rescued. But the bad news is the building suffered significant damage. So you've reopened. Yeah. And tell me the good news.
My goodness. It's been quite a year since last June. And the good news is we're back and better than ever. And you know the old saying that necessity is the mother of invention. People ask me all the time, how did you do everything that you guys did? Because not only did we quickly find a new location to operate from, which was at the Chicago Executive Airport, thanks to Signature Aviation. It was actually really cool operating out of an airplane hangar. I don't think it would have been quite as cool as if this had happened in the winter. But since it was summer, it was kind of fun. And I learned all kinds of stuff about aviation. So it was interesting. In the meantime, we worked on rebuilding our shelter. And you know how, you know, Heartland had just moved in. So I had just joined them right after they had moved to this building. And you know how when you move somewhere and you kind of rush to get stuff done and maybe you don't have the budget. So there were things that after you're settled in, you say, oh, man, I wish we had, you know, done this with the floor, or I wish we had some windows here. The great news is we were able to, incorporate what we're calling the silver lining benefits and not only move back, but make some improvements that have really, you know, improved the quality of life for the animals and for the people there.
Yeah, and so I know that several donors really stepped up, you know. So in mm-hmm. a way, it was it a blessing in a very roundabout way that this really bad thing happened, but you made lemonade out of it, as they say?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, if you had told me the day that it happened, don't worry, this is a blessing, I would have thought you were insane. I mean, I don't want to downplay how horrible it was. We were really, really close to losing a lot of animals. The water line was right at the bottom of the isolation cages, for example, where we had hand-loop positive kittens, very sick kittens that were very close to being washed away. There were small dogs floating in their beds. I mean, it was bad. And, you know, when my operations manager called, and we laugh about this now, but at the time I thought, is she exaggerating? That she said, hey, you better get up here. And it was, 6:20 or something in the morning. I was not quite yet awake. My alarm goes off at 7. I was a little bit kind of groggy, and I thought, oh, she's exaggerating. I know it's going to be a had the day of mopping. When I saw things from our kennel about 3-4 blocks down the road that had been washed out because it was like a tidal wave, and it took everything in its path, then I realized, oh, my God, this really is bad. I mean, the pipe burst under the floor, and the pressure was so extreme that it broke through a concrete floor and just rushed through and took everything out. You can't imagine something like that could happen until you're involved in it. So we're so grateful. We got 101 animals out. We quickly turned to the community. The community stepped up. And then the best news about all of it was not only were we able to rebuild and get back within 7 months, but we had our best intake and adoption year ever.
Wow.
Last year.
Well, I also, Jenny,
Go ahead.
I know you well, so I also think that you merit a great deal of credit for all this. You know, I've been alongside your career for many years now, and at times in this profession, you just need to pivot. You need to be like a rubber band. You need to be able to stretch every which way. And you've grown up in the profession, so you know, and you've had experience doing just that. And that's exactly what you did here. And I think you and your staff merit, and volunteers merit, so much credit for doing all those things to make all of these, for example, adoptions happen.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, thank you so much. And you know what? It's like we all can get caught up, I think, in the day-to-day of our lives and of our work. And you always think that you're doing a good job and you're really trying. But it's true. It's like sometimes when you have to pivot and there are things that we thought about, right? So you always say, well, you know, we gotta recruit more fosters and we gotta make the process easier. Well, it wasn't any easier that day. You can't take your dog, take one. And, you know, and I think the team learned a lot of lessons from that experience. And, you know, whether we like it or not, people respond to tragedies. And so I think a lot of people in the community also probably experienced that thought of, you know, I've been thinking of fostering. I really ought to fill that out. I really ought to give them a call. And then, oh my gosh, they really need it. And there's no more, you know, putting it off. You just, people stepped up to do it and everyone came together and it was absolutely amazing, and we're so grateful, but we're tired. I mean, it was nonstop because, you know, for 7 months we were having to rebuild. We were in satellite locations. We were managing high populations of animals all over the place, and so everyone really extended themselves, but it really paid off, and I think that adrenaline that pushed us turned into some momentum that we're still feeling. So, you know, now we are on track to beat all of our records from last year, you know. And so we're going to keep riding this wave as long as we can because the animals need us. As you know, the national trends have not been looking great. And so we know we're needed and we're going to keep doing the best that we can to help as many as we can. And so we're just really grateful that the community is in it with us.
Well, and yes, nationally and in Chicago and the Chicago area, adoption numbers are down. Intake numbers, the number of animals going into shelters, that's up. The good news is that there is foster, but that in many places, most places, is down as well. So what do you do? Well, the question I have for you, Jenny, when we come back is why is this happening in the first place? And what might some of the solutions be? So from Heartland Animal Shelter, with the very big heart that she has proven it for a career. Jenny Schluter-Schleter is here, and we'll be back with her next on WGN. She is the executive director at Heartland Animal Shelter in Wheeling, right next to the airport. There she is. Are planes going overhead? Are you being buzzed by airplanes right now as we speak, Jenny?
Pretty much all the time.
And they had this huge flood and received even some national attention and heroically managed to get all of the animals out. Jenny explained that you're back up and running. It's on Milwaukee Avenue in Wheeling. Do I remember right?
So move just a couple miles down the road. So it's on Palwaukee Avenue. So just about a couple blocks northwest of the Chicago Executive Airport.
Right. I should know that. Palwaukee Avenue. And that is in Wheeling, that much I know. And it's the Heartland Animal Shelter. So nationally and in Chicago, and I mean the greater Chicago area, many, not you, you've said, I don't know how you've avoided it, but adoption numbers.
I don't either.
Yeah, well, good for you, though. Adoption numbers overall are down. The intake, the number of animals going into shelters, unfortunately, is up. Jenny, that's a bad combination. So why do you think that's happening right now?
Yeah, so it's something that, you know, my colleagues and I are talking about quite a bit, and I was recently in a meeting with the Chicago Inhumane Coalition, and everybody has been lamenting that adoptions are down, mostly, let me say, of medium to large dogs. So we know that, you know, small dogs are generally in demand. We also know, and as you and I have gone back right to 20 years ago when it was so hard to find people to adopt cats, cats are more in demand now, which is great for cats. But medium to large dogs are really struggling. And I think there's what we talk about is a combination of factors. There are a lot of issues with housing and housing restrictions. A lot of landlords are saying, in property managers saying, no dogs, you know, over 30 pounds. Well, those are the dogs that need us the most. So there's that issue. We also talk about a post-pandemic world where, you know, when people were home and had more free time, and quite frankly, when evictions were paused, more people could keep their pets, more people had pets. And as things, you know, went back to quote unquote normal, and those evictions started up again and people went back to work, and it seemed like too many people found that they were struggling to be able to keep their pets. And then there's, you know, economic issues. There's, you know, without getting too political, there we're getting calls all the time now about people and their legal status, and perhaps they're leaving or they're afraid they'll be deported.
Wow.
That's playing into animals entering shelters. So there's a lot of factors.
Yeah, that last one, actually, I did not know about. So you are actually getting phone calls from people fearful that they're going to be deported, but they want their pet to be safe. And before that can potentially happen, even in the suburbs, you're in Wheeling. So even in the burbs, you know, and they're giving up their pet proactively from their perspective. Is that that's a thing?
Correct. Correct. And when I, and when this was part of, what was that, in 2016, the same thing when there were talks of deporting people then as well under that administration. And I was at Chicago Animal Care and Control at that time. I spoke with a lot of people with those same concerns. And so since we are primarily transferring animals in from those shelters, we're seeing the impact there. But we're also seeing that locally, Wheeling does have a pretty significant immigrant population as well. So we're seeing that as well there in the suburbs.
And what you did mention is something that is a good thing that's been happening for years now, and that is shelters in a specific community, for example, shelters in the Chicago area, talk to one another. There's a coalition that you mentioned. And what's more, that if you have the ability, the space, to bring in some animals from a place where they are overcrowded, and that typically may be an animal care and control facility such as Chicago Animal Care and Control, you are able to do that. And I believe you have been doing that, Jenny.
Yes, Chicago Animal Care and Control is our number one transfer partner. We take, I think, about 70% of our cats and about 50% of our dogs from Chicago Animal Care and Control. We really make a concerted effort to help them because, quite frankly, it's the lowest funded municipal big city shelter in the country, and they've really been struggling. They need the help, and so we want to be there for them. Also, they hold a special place in my heart since I worked there for so long, so I really firsthand know the need there, and it's really become a big part of our mission is to help Chicago Animal Care and Control.
So in the 2 minutes or so we have remaining, can you comment on those who somehow, some way, blame the city's underfunded municipal facility for having to euthanize animals, which is something that, of course, for the most part, they don't want to do unless the animal is so sick that there is nothing they can do about it or has significant behavior issues where they feel they can do nothing about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, as you know, it's a really, really complicated issue. I think, though, that one thing I always remind people is that nobody goes into animal welfare to work with animals because they want to euthanize animals. So, you know, we can debate, you know, policies and management and funding and all of those things, but that's the one thing that you know, we can all agree on is that nobody there wants to kill any animal. But we do need to work harder. I think there are so many people out there. I mean, they have so many dedicated volunteers working hard. I think that over the years, we worked really hard to raise awareness. I was the one who was able to start social media, official social media channels there. And prior to that, you know, there wasn't a lot of transparency. So I think there have been huge improvements there that's helping to raise that awareness. And now we need to get people to collaborate. And I will say one other thing, going back to why there are more animals in shelters that impacts everybody, is that during the pandemic, do you remember when people were doing absolutely everything online? They were also ordering their dogs online, right? So there are studies that show that Generation Z is used to doing everything online and continue to order puppies online. It takes about two minutes to go online and order one, and they'll literally deliver it to your door. And that's another issue that we need to confront, because like it or not, when people are acquiring their pets that way, it's going to impact all of us.
Well, and you're not ordering a washing machine. You're ordering a living, breathing thing, you know, and that's not... We don't have time now to go into it, but that's absolutely not the right way to do it. Seeing that animal in person is the right way to do it. You can do that at Heartland Animal Shelter. Give me your website and your street address one more time.
Yay. It's heartlandanimalshelter.org, and we are located in Wheeling. It's 586 Kalwaukee Drive in Wheeling.
You are amazing. Jenny Schluterschlieter, thank you. It's always great to talk with you. I think in all the years of doing this radio show, publicists they send me pitches. And that's true for all the hosts here. You are in communication with people who do public relations, and they promote whatever it is they're promoting, a book, a movie, whatever it is, including sometimes veterinarians, or at least groups of veterinarians. And I'm being very honest with you. I received this email that said, the pitch was, talk about the human midlife crisis in pets. Literally, that's what it said, word per word. And I said, the what? I've never heard of that. So we'll all together better understand what this pitch is about next week on the show with Dr. Kelly Fishman. We'll also talk with the executive director of the International Association of Animal Behavior Consultants, dog training methods. They've been in the news more than ever before, including the use of shock collars. We'll hear what they have to say about that next week. She is Darlene Duggan, the president of Anti-Cruelty. And earlier in the show, Darlene, we talked to, you may not have heard, Jenny Schluter from Heartland Animal Shelter up in Wheeling. And we talked about a lot of different things. And, you know, Heartland, somehow, some way, they're managing to do very well in a culture right now that is very, very tough in the animal welfare world. And you'll tell me where you think Chicago is at in a moment. But it seems this is happening, to my knowledge, all over the country as well, where unfortunately not as many animals are being adopted as animals being relinquished. And that imbalance, that's a problem for the animals and the animal shelters. So can you comment on that?
Yeah, absolutely, Steve. So we are seeing a pretty significant shift in the sort of in and out of animals, the population flow of animals. And what we're noticing right now is that there are more animals needing the services of a shelter than there are animals leaving into adoptive homes or into permanent placements. And so, as you can imagine, just like a plumbing system or just like traffic on the highway, the more cars getting on the highway with not as many cars leaving the highway causes a traffic jam. And that's essentially what we're noticing at the shelter, is there is a log jam of animals. The intake far exceeds the outcome. And so we are having to make lots of different strategic adjustments into how we're managing our population right now.
Now, one of those off-ramps would be foster families, and it has been true, but generally fewer of those as well.
Yeah, for the same reason that there are fewer adopters right now. And for us, specifically at Anti-Cruelty, we're seeing the biggest strain right now in the large dogs. We're very good right now with cats. Small dogs and puppies are still moving through our system at rates that, you know, are typical for us. It's the larger dogs. Those dogs that are probably, you know, 30, 35 plus pounds are the ones that we're struggling the most with. But you're exactly right, using that analogy of the highway system, and potential off-ramp would be foster. And for the exact same reasons as people are not necessarily opening their homes to large dogs for adoption, the same is true for fostering. And we are doing all that we can to make it as easy as it could possibly be to foster for us, providing as many resources and support and all of the things so that folks can help us increase our capacity for care by becoming a foster family for our dogs.
Now, I'm about to say something controversial but true. And that is, if for any reason you feel you want to relinquish your pet and you call most, if not just about every, animal sheltering facility, not only in Chicago but the Chicago area, you are told, we don't have room at the inn. I'm sorry, we cannot take your animal. The reasons why they tell people vary, but that doesn't matter. Bottom line, they're not going to take your pet. Anti-Cruelty, Chicago Animal Care and Control. Now, Chicago Animal Care and Control will do it, and they have to by law. But they're alone except for you. Can you talk about that a little bit? Because I don't think the people understand what that means. That means you're even going to get more animals.
Yeah, exactly. So we are an open admissions shelter, and we have been, as far as I've been involved with the organization, but this, in all honesty, goes back to the early 1900s when we were founded. That literally translates to, we will take any animal in any condition and service it through our shelter. So we don't necessarily tell people, no, you're, you know, not welcomed at the inn, or we don't have room, or we don't have space right now. We will, again, service any animal. It's not just limited to dogs and cats. People bring us rabbits and gerbils and hamsters and guinea pigs and snakes and birds and on and on and on. We've gotten goats before and peacocks. I mean, we see some really, really interesting animals come through this shelter. Now, majority of the animals that do come through are dogs and cats. But again, we will take animals who are sick, who have some behavior concerns. We will take animals who are old, who are young, everything in the middle. So that is a unique feature to Anti-Cruelty, having this open door policy where we will help no matter what the situation is with the animal. Similarly, we do accept direct relinquishments from the public. That is, again, something that is unique to Anti-Cruelty. A lot of shelters and rescues will only pull from other organizations. So they will only get their animals from a municipal organization or from perhaps Chicago Animal Care and Control. And that's all well and good, and that is absolutely vital and needed within our entire ecosystem of animal welfare in our region. But for people that need to have that outlet or need to have that ability to directly relinquish, we are an open admission shelter for those folks as well.
But you don't have unlimited space. And you do. Yep. The good news is that years ago, years and years ago, there was no bird rescue or reptile rescue. So when you get those animals in today, my presumption is, as quickly as you can, you get them out to the ferret rescue organization or whatever that rescue is. If it looks like a pedigree or purebred Maine Coon cat, there's Maine Coon Rescue. There's also all the foster families, of which you don't have enough, as we mentioned, but you do certainly have some, and they go there as well. But you still don't have two things: unlimited space, and you don't have unlimited budget. So by taking care of so many, you are also saying, we're taking care of so many. And even if they don't need medical care, they need food and water. They need the litter, cat litter, if we're talking cats, et cetera. So that is something that I think the public, actually, Darlene, may not understand about anti-cruelty.
Yeah, I mean, you describe it perfectly, Steve. That is exactly how we're set up here, is, you know, again, being that outlet for the public that, you know, needs help with their hard-to-place animals as well as needs help with their maybe easier-to-place animals and everything in between. So I think your description of your definition of sort of the open admissions shelter, the open door shelter strategy is spot on.
And needed in Chicago. I mean, imagine. I mean, already animal care and control, for a variety of reasons we'll talk about after the break, they are overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. And it's getting to be where you are too. And we'll talk about why it is that more people are giving up their animals and why it is that fewer are adopting. When we come back, she will have all the answers, I'm sure. Darlene Duggan, President, Anti-Cruelty. She is the president of Anti-Cruelty on Grand and LaSalle in Chicago, where we hope you come in and adopt an animal. As you know what? I would say that about any animal sheltering facility. The problem is, I can say it, but adoptions are down. You pointed out, interestingly enough, not as true for cats. So going back in time, I knew you at a point where you worked at a cat shelter in Chicago, and we were struggling to get people to adopt cats. And that's been the case for a very long time. Now it seems everyone wants a cat, and that's a good thing, that cat adoption numbers are not suffering the same way that dog adoption numbers are. Do you have any idea why?
Oh, I think that's the million-dollar question. I don't know why necessarily, but yay for cats.
yes.
And I have been working in animal welfare now for probably about 25 years. Yes, I am getting very old.
No.
But if you had told me that we would be having this conversation about cats not having problems with adoption numbers, you know, 10 years ago, I would have laughed and said, that's impossible. The script has flipped. The typical expectations or sort of the historical data of cats used to be that a typical shelter would struggle to find cat homes, and dogs would be the consistent adoption factor in the whole equation. But now that's different. Cats are, quote unquote, flying off the shelves, and it's dogs that we're trying to solution through. And again, this is not unique to Anti-Cruelty or the Chicago region. This is a trend that we're seeing across the nation. So it's interesting. It's interesting, and we put so much focus on the struggle with dogs that, thank you for pointing this out, you know, we don't take enough time to celebrate that cats are doing great. And I'm sure there are pockets in areas that maybe aren't seeing necessarily this much success with cat placement. But for the most part, cats are doing really, really well. So yay for kitties. But one of the things that I think contributes to that is the rising cost of just animal care in general. It is expensive to have a pet. It is expensive to feed your pet. It is expensive to take your pet to the veterinary, to the veterinarian, you know, once a year for their annual checkups, or, you know, if anything goes wrong, someone gets sick. So I think there might be some economic factor to this, is that cats in general are a little bit more affordable. Cats also are easier to have multiples of. So that probably contributes to this as well, is, you know, it's okay, or it's easier, I should say, not okay, but easier to have maybe two or three cats in your home, whereas if you have two or three dogs, you know, that's a whole different routine, that's a whole different scenario. So those are just some reasons why I think perhaps cats are finding themselves successful in this moment in time, but we are struggling maybe a little bit more on the dog side.
You're in Chicago. In Chicago at this very moment, it can be difficult to have a dog, particularly a larger dog, because of HOAs and because of landlords saying you can have a dog, but that dog must be under, I don't know, 25, 30 pounds, whatever the weight limit is. Or they may say you cannot have a dog, period. Is that part of the problem? Combined with, we have more multi-dog homes than ever before. And maybe people can pay that extra amount of money for a dog. But now, if you have two or three dogs, it's two or three times as much money every month for rent as some are charging. Is that part of the issue?
It might be part of the issue, and I say it might be because that's certainly, I think, a contributing factor for anti-cruelty for our shelter in and of itself. We are located right near downtown where there's lots of high rises, there's lots of smaller apartments, due to the housing density and just kind of the architecture of the neighborhood. But in further out suburbs, where people have backyards or they have bigger access to bigger square footage, we are still seeing, just kind of a lack of adoption of large dogs there. So I think that's a partial explanation, but not the full explanation. But it's certainly a contributing factor, absolutely.
That's a very good point. So one way you can help is to, if you possibly can, consider fostering. But you guys have another interesting program where I can come in, I can knock at your door, just like that, and say, I want to walk a dog. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. We make it so easy to come in and support the animals in our care, just like we have an open door for the community when they need us to help care for their pets. We welcome the community to come in and help us care for the pets in our care at any moment in time. We call that program the Dog's Day Out program. And that literally you can take a dog from one of our kennels and you can take it for an afternoon adventure around the city. We have a list of cool places that are dog friendly, especially now that it's summer and it's so easy to do in the warm weather. A lot of people will just honestly take the dog and take it back to their apartment, their house, their condo, whatever it is, and give the dog a break from the stress and the kind of loud, excessive noises in the shelter and just give it a break in time. You can do anything. People bring the dogs to the beach. It's really a great program for the dog. It gives them a break from the shelter. It's a great program for the people. It gives you a fun afternoon with a furry friend. It's a win-win for everybody involved.
And you have an event coming up we quickly can talk about. We only have about a minute and a half here, called POUR. Explain what POUR is all about.
Yes, POUR stands for Pour Your Heart Out. And it is a wine tasting, alcohol tasting kind of event in which animal lovers of all sorts, whether it's dogs or cats or anything else, come together to support our mission. And this is a great fundraiser for us. It's a great way for us to spread awareness about all of the work that we do, including all of our community outreach, our spay-neuter clinic, all of the things. It's just a great celebration for anti-cruelty and a great way for us to raise support and raise awareness of all of the programs and services that we offer. This year, POUR is going to be at Sarah Bond, and we are going to be celebrating together on September 25th. Tickets will be going on sale mid-July, so look to our website, anticruelty.org, for those tickets to be available. They do sell out, so I would encourage people to get their tickets as soon as they possibly can. It's going to be a fun night. I'm really looking forward to it.
Well, I've done it every year, and actually, it must be an accident that I've tasted some of these things. So you can do the same thing, friends. Taste to your heart's delight, not only wine, but bourbons and beer at POUR, which is coming up. You can register. Anticruelty.org is the website. Anti-Cruelty is located at Grand and LaSalle. Darlene Duggan, thank you for all the amazing work you, your staff, and all the volunteers at Anti-Cruelty, and for that matter, all the Chicago animal shelters do. Thank you so much. Dogs really do die in hot cars. People think, well, this is kind of a urban myth of some sort. No, it's not. I even have numbers to prove it. So, according to the People for Ethical Treatment of Animals, in 2024, last year, 82 dogs died in a hot car. Now, of course, those are reported cases. Probably that number is much higher. So far this year, we're talking about at least 20 dogs that have died a needless death in a hot car, because no one wants, I can't imagine, to run an errand, leave the dog in a car, and increasingly in commune and see that dog die. I mean, who wants that, right? It's terrible. And increasingly in communities, there are laws now that allow, first of all, law enforcement, call the police. If you see a dog in a hot car, I mean, if it's 75 degrees, 80 degrees or warmer, that's hot enough. And even if the window is open a crack, that car is going to get so hot that you would not be able to sit in that car. A child would not be able to sit in that car. On a 90-degree day, the car will heat up to well over 100 degrees in 10 minutes or less. And again, that's even with the windows open a crack. Now, to us, that can be dangerous. We're talking heat stroke to a human being. So if we're talking heat stroke to a human being, we're definitely talking heat stroke for a dog, because dogs do not, they're not physically, physiologically able to self-regulate their body temperatures as humans can, because panting is nowhere near as efficient as sweating. So what is a potential death sentence to us is really a likely death sentence to a dog. Don't leave your dogs in hot cars. We'll talk to you next week, bright and early, on WGN.